Hello, everyone. This is the Final Play Podcast, where this week it's NFL week again, week eight of all the scores, our breakdown of the games, any little NFL news, and also the trade deadline or lack thereof.
That was an extremely boring trade deadline finish today. That was nothing like what the NBA does. So, but yeah, let's hit it.
All right. Welcome, everyone. My name is Jason.
Confirmed. And my name's Miles.
Confirmed. run through the games quickly. The Vikings getting over the Redskins 19-9. Having a good run, the Vikings. The Seattle Seahawks 27-20 over the hapless Falcons. The Philadelphia Eagles getting over the Bills 31-13. The Chargers, LA Chargers getting over the Bears 17-16. The Detroit Lions beating the New York Giants 31-26. The Tennessee Titans over the Buccaneers 27-23. The Colts just getting over the Broncos 15-13. The LA Rams getting over the Bengals 24-10. The New Orleans Saints again getting over the Cards 31-9. Jacksonville Jaguars beating the Jets 29-15. The 49ers demolishing Carolina Panthers 51-13. The Patriots and the Browns, 27-13, a bit closer. It didn't look like it, but a bit closer than everyone thought it was going to be, at least anyway. The Houston Texans getting over the Raiders, another close one, 27-24. The Packers getting over the Chiefs, watched every little bit of that game, 31-24, because we were quiet at work. And the Monday night game, the Pittsburgh Steelers, 27-14 over the Dolphins. Maybe we'll start with the 49ers.
Where did you want to start?
Yeah, if we start at the 49ers, I guess. The 7-0 49ers getting over the Panthers. What are your thoughts on that game?
Smash fest and not so much a coming out party for Nick Bosa, but holy moly, did he dominate that game defensively. I think he had three sacks. He had an interception, which Kyle Allen basically threw right at his face. he nearly took it back to the house. I don't know what Kyle Allen's thinking. He pegged it at him, and it was amazing that he caught it. But the other thing with that too was an offensive display by Tevin Coleman as well. Like he had we had three touchdowns on the day. And he had like 11 rushes for 105 yards, two catches for 13 yards and a touchdown. It was crazy.
Yeah. It was classic sort of San Francisco game, the way they've been playing this year, that Jimmy G doesn't really have to do much for that team to sort of, come out with the win. Like I said, coming out party, yes, for Bosa, but you know, the whole, I guess, the roster, Tevin Coleman, George Kittle, Emmanuel Sanders for his first game, got a few catches in there.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Now that they're going to use Emmanuel Sanders as a true number one receiver, it'll be interesting to see how the offense grows and see what Kyle Shanahan can sort of, you know, dish up with the passing game as well as, you know, sort of their... They're pretty heavy run offense at the moment. Like you said, that they're just not relying on Garoppolo to win them games. So
no,
defensively and their running game is the thing that's getting the job done. So it'll be interesting to see. I'd have to sort of have a look at their schedule if they come up against a team and not to be a bit of a homer, but you know a team like New Orleans who can stuff the run. And see how they react to that, in regards of let's have Jimmy G beat us instead of the running game.
Yeah, well, looking at their schedule, a lot of real easy games to be honest. They play the Cards twice. It's pretty much like not up until end of November they've got the Packers, and then the start of December is the Saints. So. Fairly easy run in, I guess, but I think it's on the back of their defense. Like they're the only team
for sure. Their defense is crazy.
Yeah, well, they're the only team after seven games that are under 100 in points against. So 77 points against. So their defense is phenomenal. Like you said, on the back of Nick Bosa, Richard Sherman, Fred Warner, like that. Their defense is just unbelievable.
Well, that's the thing too. You almost forget that they've got Richard Sherman there.
Yeah. Yeah, do.
As a safety slash corner, you know, in the backfield. So it's, you know, it's pretty wild to sort of say that he's a bit of an afterthought when they've got a front line like they do. And they sort of, you know, they sort of force Kyle Allen into his, you know, probably his worst game of the year. You know, he's been a pretty good game manager, and he hasn't really put a foot wrong, but he threw with three interceptions. So yeah, that might have brought him back down to earth a little bit. And there's the possibility that Cam Newton will be back sooner rather than later. But if you're the Panthers, you stick with Kyle Allen, right?
You do. Yeah, I think so. I mean, yes, he's put a foot wrong against a team that is being playing phenomenally well. But
well, that's right.
I mean, at least to see how he goes next week. So they got the Cards next week, so should be an easy win. But
you never know. It's going to be one of these games where they're going to slip up, and I think the Patriots will be like that as well. You know, they're probably less likely to have a slip up game, you know, against a relatively easy side, but they just, at the moment, the 49ers just don't look like they're going to have that at the moment.
And they should win the division pretty easily. I guess my concern with them is just the postseason. Can they, like Jimmy G is not playing bad, but he's also not playing great either.
He's not being asked to throw 40 to 45 times. That's the
correct thing.
Correct.
But you're right. But my concern with him, because we don't really know how he's going to be in the postseason. That's all. It's not like he's Brady or something that, you know, can manage a game. That'll be my only concern with it.
Yeah, no, that's right. But, you know, they'll have, the way that they're going, they'll have a home field advantage. And even if they do have to travel, you know, generally a defense travels and a run game travels. So, you know, if you're not asking for Jimmy G to do a whole lot, then, you know, the formula that they've got at the moment is working a treat.
The a couple of the other games I was going to look at, I did want to talk about the Saints. I mean, I know we talk about them a lot, obviously, because they're one of your favorite teams. But, it was a decent win, 31-9. The two reasons I want to talk about it was, one, Drew Brees come back quite quickly, more than anyone ever thought, but again, just did what Drew Brees does.
Well, he beat the 6 weeks, and that was his plan all along, was to beat the 6 week you know, time frame that he had to come back. So he come back in five. So you know, and
373
kudos to Bridgewater going 5-0. But, you know, he just threw for a lazy 373 yards and three touchdowns. So, you know, pretty cruisy day for Breeze in the pocket there.
Yeah, just a little. But, again, with Alvin Kamara out, Latavius Money,
He has been money the last 2 weeks.
He has been. That was not even intended, but anyway.
Oh, that was excellent.
getting over 100 yards again with touchdowns. That wasn't even intentional. That was awesome.
Oh, I'm going to write that one down, calling that for the rest of the year. Money.
Kamara was game time decision, but he's just another player that, just like, I guess, Teddy Bridgewater, that stepped up in the absence of...
That's why they got him. They had to replace Mark Ingram somehow, you know, so they can still sort of keep that sort of two-headed running back monster sort of going, because Ingram was great for the 2 years that he was there with Alvin Kamara. So, and Latavius Murray he's no slouch. He was pretty good in Minnesota last year. So, to keep Arizona to three field goals, to keep anybody, you know, really to three field goals, but, you know, fairly, I think a fairly dominating sort of performance there by New Orleans. Like, there's not really that much to sort of to say about that going into the bye week this week, so everybody can sort of get some rest. And I can only assume that that AK-41 will be back tomorrow. Be back next week.
What do you think is the Kyler Murray sort of bubble burst? I mean, there wasn't, you know, it's not like he's come out and, you know, lit the world on fire, but he's also, I guess he hasn't been playing bad. It is his first season after all.
I don't think it's his. I don't think it's his bubble burst. I think it's the Cliff Kingsbury bubble that's burst.
It's possibly the kid. Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure if I looked up correctly, he hasn't. Kyler Murray hasn't thrown a TD pass four of the last five games.
Correct. Yeah. No, so I think I did see that same.
That's a little sort of scary. Even though they probably don't have the best sort of wide receiver core, you know, they've got old man Fitzgerald there, so you know who's going to be fairly. Fairly reliable for them, but they're just not getting the passing game going, and they got running backs dropping like flies at the moment too. Like David Johnson's gone, his replacement Chase Edmonds has now gone down, so that they're onto a third string running back as well. So, they're offensively challenged to say the least at the moment. So, it's injuries, but it's football and injuries happen. So, you know, that's just unfortunately what you've got to deal with. Let's see what the new boy wonder can dish up.
The Patriots game, getting over the Browns. Look, there wasn't much to sort of take off it. I guess the thing I wanted to bring up that was Bill Belichick's 300th win.
That's right.
His first win, coincidentally, was. Coaching the Browns, playing the Patriots. So that was
was against the Pats, was it?
Yeah. So he was a coach of the Browns against the Pats. So little tidbit. Wow. That was
there you go.
Ironic.
Yeah, no, that is. I knew that he was the Browns coach there for a little while and they sort of didn't want him. Mm-hmm. And now he's just turned into the it's typical Browns. Now he's just turned into, you know, the greatest coach that's ever, you know, graced a football field. So congratulations to the Browns, 22 years ago. So
22 years ago.
Brady's been
possible.
There.
It's possible.
I think he was there for a little bit before Brady got there. And Brady sort of he was the one that sort of believed in Brady when I think the quarterback back then was Drew Bledsoe. Yeah. And he went down and he just threw Brady out there and Brady, overtook Drew Bledsoe and basically took his starting job.
Yeah, that was it straight after that once he was down. I think Belichick was the one. Like it was sixth round he got drafted, but I think Belichick was the one that
sixth round, 100. I think it was the 199
or something. But I think Belichick pushed that as what I've read. I mean, don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure Belichick has. He was the one that said, "Yeah, no, I can see what I can do with this guy." So
that's right. And with all the talk was, that's right. Sixth round pick. Oh. His combine film was pretty ordinary. So obviously, obviously he's seen something in him. But I've got a little something for Freddie Kitchens at the end. So I don't really want to spoil that. But Nick Chubb said it sort of had an up and down sort of game. He had the 20 rushes for the 131 yards, but he had two fumbles and two crucial fumbles as well. So it was he had that massive run. I think it was about a 40 or 45 yard run, and then he got hit from behind, and the ball popped out. That was his second fumble, and the Browns had three turnovers in three consecutive plays.
Yeah,
like you just can't do that against any team, let alone against the Patriots.
Correct. And look, I really don't know what to make of. I've completely lost it. Of Baker Mayfield, he had that massive hype two years ago, sort of when he came in. But I don't know, like this team that this was the most hyped team at the start of the year, and it just, yeah, I mean, it's not like he doesn't have duds to throw to. He has very, very good players to throw to. And I don't know if he can get it done. I don't know. Just on then with that, the next game that we were going to talk about was the Rams. I just wanted to bring up with the Rams, but getting over the Bengals, pretty decent sort of game. Wasn't really unexpected in that win. It was just the Cooper Kupp, 220 yards with one touchdown. It was, a phenomenal effort by Cooper Kupp, which obviously pushed then Jared Goff to 372 yards. I don't know what's going to happen with the Bengals. They're 0-8 now. I don't know if they can win. Like, Joe Mixon is playing well.
Is it a Freddie Kitchens thing?
Okay. Maybe. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Or you want to bring it up later?
With the Rams game in London.
No, the Freddie Kitchens thing.
Like I said, I've got a little bit of something for Kitchens later, but it's just, I think that's a little bit of the problem, and that's what sort of some of the skeptics have brought up throughout the season, at the start of the season, that as a rookie head coach, could he get the job done? Could he bring these guys together? You know, obviously, yeah. Baker's an incendiary type person with his personality. You've got Odell Beckham Jr., who's not exactly, loves the spotlight. Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr. are both were college teammates at LSU. So yep. They've obviously got a decent rapport, but that doesn't really help, team chemistry. It's the quarterback getting, in sync with his receivers. And like you said, they've got guys like Nick Chubb that they can rely on in the running game. It's not as if that he's got chumps to throw to.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre that they're performing so poorly.
Yeah.
Is it a play calling issue? I'm not 100% sure. I could only assume so, but Baker looks like he's seriously regressed from mm-hmm. what he was dishing up with last year. So it's just,
well, yeah, at least towards the end of start last year, like the start, he wasn't setting the world on fire, but towards the end, he had that little, they had those couple of wins and the hype was a little bit there. And yeah, maybe he has regressed.
Well, that's the thing. And the whole reason that Freddie Kitchens got the head job, the head coaching job there, not the head job there, the head coaching job there. Let's add that little line.
He probably had to give one to get the job. But anyway.
stop it. Head coaching job.
Yeah.
Head coaching job. Head coaching job. Yes, coaching job.
Freddie J. Kitchens. Keep going.
Freddie H.J. Kitchens. All right. No, but the reason that he got that job was Baker loved him. So that was part of it. This is who he wants there. So let's run with it. And they end up getting OBJ and everything like that. But it's just, it's either got to be partial play calling, and if Baker can't get protected by his offensive line, then he's going to be ineffective anyway.
Yeah, that's correct. But look, it's just a wait and see. They're really probably not going to I don't even see him getting a wild card spot. But
their schedule does get easier after this game. Yeah. But they've got the Broncos next week. And they've also got another tough game after that as well. But then they've got, but it's in Denver. It's in Denver next week. So can they turn it on and go to Denver and try and get the W? Like, Denver have lost like three of their five games now by like 3 points, like 4 points or less.
Yeah.
So they're not exactly getting blown out either. Yeah. You defensively are right. Since I called them out a couple of weeks ago, they've actually been, pretty good defensively. And just touching on sort of the Broncos as well, Joe Flacco has come out and sort of called out their offensive coordinator or the offensive play calling and said they're a little bit too conservative. And Flacco is actually out this week with a herniated disc in his back. And their backup, Brandon Allen, is starting. So that's probably, that could only assume that's a good thing for the Browns. I sort of checked it out. That why wouldn't they start Drew Locke, but the rookie Drew Locke, but he's actually on the IR. So that's him dusted. So that I could only assume they would have started Drew Locke this week, but they haven't. So they're running with Brandon Allen. So it'll be interesting to see what they look like offensively this week against the Browns.
Yeah, and they their run in, I guess, this is just for the Browns, I guess, to finish on. They, after next week against the Broncos, they got the Bills, but after that, it's a pretty easy run in with two games against the Steelers, the Cards, the Ravens, Dolphins, and Bengals. So,
that's right. Yeah, they've got a lot of division games to finish off the season. So, Pittsburgh don't look like they're going to be easy beats like they were at the start of the year. Obviously, the Bengals, they're going to be the Bengals and do Bengal things. Just funnily enough, by the looks of it, they're going to benched Andy Dalton now for the I think he was a rookie, Ryan Finley. So, or maybe he was last year's draft pick.
Another classic second string quarterback this year.
Exactly. Somebody else has been benched now. Mm. So the Red Rifle's has run his course this year so far. So it'll be interesting to see how their offense chugs along without him, and obviously without AJ Green. So they're looking for answers, but
they're not finding any at all.
It doesn't look like they're going to find any anytime soon. So that sort of helps the Browns. Yeah, I think the Browns have only had like one or two divisional games to start the season. So that sort of bodes well for them at the end of the season to be able to have two games against the Bengals, and obviously Pittsburgh, and they knocked off Baltimore in Baltimore earlier in the year. That was the sort of bit of a surprise the way that they've been playing. So it'll be interesting to see how they can sort of finish everything off.
That was sort of the main games I wanted to touch on. Was there any more games to touch on for you before moving on?
No, well, as we sort of, before we got cut off by technology, the Rams in London against the Falcons, was it not?
The game's just gone. Is that what you're saying? Or the next week?
Yeah, the game the Rams had in London.
No, that was against the Bengals. Yeah, that was against the Bengals, that game. So, moving on from that game, I guess, for the Bengals and Rams, we'll just get Miles back later. There is another game in London next week. I'll just sort of, guess, finish on with the games. I still don't know what's happening with the Falcons. Look, they came up against a really good Seattle Seahawks team, but it's just they're not sure what's happening. Like, look, Matt Ryan was out and Matt Schaub stood up. And good look, had a really, really good game. 460 yards with one touchdown. But it's probably their defense now that's not getting it done for the Falcons. With the Seattle Seahawks, Chris Carson had a really good game. 20 carries for 90 yards. But looks like Matt Ryan is injured, and I don't think he's playing again next week. So, Matt Schaub, clearly Julio Jones likes him, 152 yards, for 10, carries. So,
well, Schaub threw 52 times. I don't think Matt Ryan's thrown 52 times this year, in a single game. So yeah. I'm not sure sort of, how they sort of go from there. But it's just, I don't know, the Falcons just, they look lost.
They look lost.
Completely lost.
They look lost, but that's probably the best game of it. And it's probably because of Matt Ryan. Like, you know, we kept saying about, like, a lot of other factors in that team. But, like, maybe Matt Ryan was the issue. I mean, issue at least this year, because you're right. I mean, it's 460 yards. That's a mammoth effort.
No, that's right. They looked not so much competent on, you know, on offense, but at least they could sort of move the ball around. Like you said, you know, Julio Jones had 10 catches for 152 yards. Like, yeah, that's clearly his best game of the year.
Yeah,
and they, you know, it's clearly sort of as if they don't have people to throw to as well. Like, Calvin Ridley's no slouch. This is only his second year in the league.
Yeah.
Second? Yeah, second year in the league. I'm pretty sure he was a rookie last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he looks the goods as well. So it's just, I don't know where the Falcons turn to. I really don't.
Well, we'll circle back to the London game. Now we got you back.
I wanted to say, you know, with the 7 catches for Cooper Kupp and 220 yards.
That was phenomenal.
That 65-yard run off the wildest-looking flea flicker I've ever seen. It was just sort of a cross-route flea flicker that ended up back in Goff's hands. And, you know, Kupp ended up catching the ball downfield, and then he ran for about 40 yards, as he scored that touchdown. So he just burned everybody on the outside, just turned on the Jets.
Yeah.
And just scorched everybody. And then he just had a little bit of resistance before he got to the end zone, and then just barged over. I can't remember who the safety was that was coming across, and then just barged over him and scored the TD. So, the London crowd got their money's worth on that play alone.
Well, and I guess the thing I just wanted to talk about is just that, I mean, even next week, there's another London game next week. The Texans and the Jaguars. That's another Wembley Stadium game.
The Jags like taking home games over to London.
Their owners own an English Premier League side. Maybe the Premier League, sorry, an English football side in Fulham. So,
Div 1.
It's not that. Like, I get why they're doing it, the NFL, but I'm going through all the games for next week, and then, you know, the tickets available, tickets as low as $106, $85, $80, and then you come to that London game, and then tickets as low as $10. So,
oh baby,
it would be obviously awesome to go and see, but maybe is it just to fill that stadium, to sort of get that sort of, I guess, atmosphere there?
I can only assume so. Like, that's, and the only thing that sort of sucks for me is, like, you know, the NFL home games are a bit of a premium.
Yeah,
you know, I just if they can make money off it, terrific. But you know, if you're going to be an actual contender, like, home field advantage is pretty big. So, you know, to take one of your home games, I think I mentioned this before in a previous pod.
To take your
home games over to London, like, that sucks for your fans inside that, you know, in that city.
Yeah.
Yeah, you only get 8 home games a year. So and if you're a team that's taking multiple home games, you know, across the Atlantic there, I just think it's unfair on the fans.
Yeah, you mentioned this last time, and I completely agree with you, because, like, it's like basketball. I mean, it's not like basketball, but it's like any sport, I guess. If you want to have, you've got to have a global game. You know, you've got to get other countries involved. Because to me, if I compare it to basketball and football, American football, basketball is a more global sport. Because,
oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, basketball's, I think is a distant second, but, you know, it's as much a global game as what soccer is.
Oh yeah, correct. And it's a distant second. But I guess in comparing it to NFL, like, you could go up to a casual person, and then they could know at least one or two sides from, possibly even a lot more from, the NBA and a lot of players, because that, you know, they have that global appeal. I just don't know if NFL, like, you know, they'll say Patriots, they'll say Tom Brady, but other than that, it just doesn't seem, and that's probably why they're doing it. It just doesn't have that global appeal.
But would they be able to recognize Tom Brady if they saw him? That's the thing. It's the recognizable characters, you know, the recognizable factor of, would you know what these players look like? You know, the NBA is different because, you know, the NFL, they wear helmets all the time. So, you know, that's what they're known for. If you know, a lot of these guys took their helmet off, would you know who they are? Would you know when they walk past you in the street who they are?
And,
besides somebody like, you know, like an offensive line or, you know, lineman or something like that, he's like 325 pounds and looks like would be able to eat you for dinner. You know, would you be able to recognize? Yeah, because a lot of running backs these days, they're not large men at all.
No, that's right. No, you're exactly right. I guess the other thing I said, that just, I guess, the recognizable side, like, you could name on one hand how many players from the NFL have even been into movies. There's only probably a couple of them that I could think of off my head, but there's about 10 or so that I could name NBA players that have been in movies in terms of appeal.
No, that's right.
Recognition.
It's the recognition.
Yeah. Moving on to the news of the week. Have any sort of news you would like to point out?
A couple of little nuggets that sort of come to mind a little bit was the Raiders, since John Gruden's taken over, they're 2-10 on the road, which is a little concerning that they can't get the job done on the road. Like, they've looked pretty good at home this year.
So
to only be able to get two games, to get the job done twice in the last two seasons on the road, is will put, you know, a serious dent in their playoff hopes if they can't start winning on the road. So I thought that was a little sort of nugget to throw out there. The other thing that sort of had come to mind was Matt Nagy, the head coach there at the Bears, was sort of very heavily criticized for his kneel play before taking the, I think it was a 51. Let me have a look down. Oh, I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. It was a 41-yard try if he didn't go for the kneel. He took the kneel, and then it turned into a 46-yard field goal. Now, he sort of come out in the press conference and said that he had no interest at all in throwing or running the ball, you know, in fear, obviously, of an interception. So that goes to show how much he trusts Mitchell Trubisky, you know, or in running the ball, you know, in just in case they fumbled. So all he wanted to do was run the play clock. Wow. Play clock, C-L-O-C-K. The play clock down. So basically they would kick the field goal as time expired. Their kicker at the moment, Eddie Pinheiro, who had missed a field goal earlier in the game, essentially misses the game winner. So that was, in the press conference, he was fairly heavily criticized about that play. I thought that was sort of an interesting little turn of events there. I don't know what the Chicago Bears do about their kicking at the moment. Like, they're just, oh man, their kickers just, you know, just can't get the job done.
No.
In recent times, you know, even going back to that missed field goal against Philadelphia in the divisional game last year in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It comes down to sort of a trust issue with his team offensively. Like, yeah, he just came straight out and said, I didn't want to pass, had no interest in running. So they just ran the play clock down to, you know, take the five yard penalty and kick the field goal. So, it was good that he had the trust in his kicker to make that 46 yarder, and he probably won't have that trust too much. Well, that trust has been, you know, has been severely dented after that.
My main news was really just sort of talking about the trade deadline, which wasn't that exciting.
Wow, that was, oof. Could you imagine if the NBA had a trade deadline like that? Like, you know, it would be just like, oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was, look, there wasn't a lot of movement. A lot of players from the Jets that everyone thinking that were moving on from, namely Jamal Adams, Robbie Anderson, even Le'Veon Bell was sort of thrown out there, and no one moved from New York Jets. The biggest sort of trade, well, not that it's big, but the one of the trades that sort of came out towards the end there was Miami Dolphins again trading.
Yeah, I thought that this was an interesting trade. I thought.
Well, they said they traded a future fifth round pick, for a future fifth round pick, and Aqib Talib, for a future round pick. So I think it was like the seventh or so. Essentially doing it so that they can clear, because they can absorb Talib's contract and clear some cap space to sign Ramsey to a long-term deal.
Yeah, that was the point of it. I think he had 4.2 mil left on his deal, Talib.
Yeah.
He's still on the IR. Like, he can't come back until, like, week 15.
Yeah.
Sort of a little, a little puzzling, but... you know, that they'll get him, and I'm pretty sure that he's a free agent after this as well. So I guess the Dolphins have got cap to burn, and there was basically a salary dump. So that was an interesting little trade that sort of happened at the 11th hour, but one that happened, I think it was, I can't remember if it was yesterday or the day before, was Kenyon Drake to the Cardinals for a 2026 rounder. So that's basically the Cardinals getting desperate for a running back. I probably thought that the Finns could have got more than a sixth rounder.
Exactly.
They've been fleecing everybody else out of their first round draft picks, and obviously Kenyon Drake's not going to attract a first round pick. But I still would have thought they could have got something better than just a sixth rounder.
So come 2020, this is what Dolphins will have. They'll have an NFL best $109 million and change in cap space, plus 13 selections in the 2020 draft.
Is that all 13? I thought they would have had about 45 draft picks in that 2020 draft.
And including 3 first rounders and 2 second rounders. So,
and that's not including the draft picks that they got for 2021 as well.
Correct. So it's tanking and it's tanking well, but the thing I like about it, it's not so much obviously the massive amount of picks, but you know, they're coming in this with a lot of money to burn too, and they see if they can get some franchise changing players. You know,
no, that's right. And the only problem with that is the way that they're playing this year, you know, absolutely horrendously. Is anybody going to want to be attracted to go to Miami besides for, you know, the weather and sunshine and, you know, South Beach and all that sort of stuff? It's going to be the extracurricular activities that's going to get you excited about going to Miami. Like, not the way that they're playing at the moment.
Not the way that they're playing, but, it's like I suppose any tanking team. But if it's in full rebuilding mode, you just need that one franchise-altering player to go there to let everyone else fall in line.
Yeah, I guess so. And the thing is too, like, the whole tank for tour, I've been sort of not so much an advocate of it, but the whole tank for tour thing. Tua's actually hurt at the moment, and he gets hurt a lot. So I'm not really sold on Tua Tagovailoa that's there at Alabama as the consensus, you know, number one franchise changing quarterback that everybody's going to want to come and play with. The things that have been coming out lately is this young kid from Ohio State is Chase Young. And he looks like he's going to be the best player in the draft. So what do Miami do? You know, have they got somebody in mind that they're going to take to her? Are they going to take somebody like a Justin Herbert, who I'm pretty sure he's the quarterback at Oregon?
I guess it's funny.
I just don't think that Tua is going to be the consensus number one guy that they're going to be looking at the moment, because he seems to get hurt a lot.
And everybody's sort of clamoring that I've read Chase Young as a huge Heisman Trophy, his massive chance for the Heisman Trophy. So He's basically.
Well, they're never going to give it. Yeah, well, so, yeah, they're never going to give it to a defensive player. Like, you know, I'll go out on a limb and say that. Like, if it's not going to be Tua, and their schedule at Alabama sort of hurts them a little bit too, because they just dominate everybody that they play, and Tua only ends up playing three quarters, and they end up sitting him, and Jalen Hurts, who was the quarterback who Tua beat out, is at Oklahoma, and he's playing unbelievable. There, you know, with Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. So it's just, I'm just not super sold on the tank for Tua. I think that there could be other franchise changing quarterbacks that are out there. If you can keep Tua healthy, okay. But yeah, you know, the past two seasons, Tua's been hurt.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, a few questions on his durability.
And the other thing, I guess, just with the like still talking about the Dolphins, the one always glaring thing with people moving to Miami and even, I guess, Florida in that aspect is they do have that tax break, and we don't have to pay income tax in Florida. So that may still get a lot of people to move, you know, Florida.
That's a huge plus. They're tax-free, that obviously affects your, and I'm not sure how they sort of work at the same thing as the NBA when they go into different states. Like, you know, they've got a pretty complex sort of way that they do the tax system when it comes to NBA players. Like, they have to file, you know, how many days they were in California. So then they get taxed that amount. Then they go, okay, we're in Texas, which is a tax-free state. Okay, we're here for 5 days. You know, it's pretty complex. So it'll be interesting to see to find out how the NFL does it, you know, just in regards to that, you know, whether they have to do essentially the same thing.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much actually counts towards sort of, I guess, the cap and everything. But I know they get a nice little tax break there, so it's always a little bit handy if you can get a tax break, I suppose.
No, that's right. Yeah. Well, that was the sort of going off topic with the NBA. That was that thing where there was a few years ago where Dwight Howard was, you know, looking at staying in LA, and he was essentially going to get a little bit bigger contract with the Lakers, but he took the less money contract-wise and went to Houston, but because of the income tax or the tax break that he got there, he ended up making more money, went into his pocket by signing with Houston, even though the deal itself was smaller than what the Lakers were offering.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, that was really weird. Yeah. So let's be, yeah, you know, Texas is one of those, you know, one of those tax-free states. So, sort of helps in that regard. You know,
helps
sort of
in that regard.
A little bit off topic to
But it's good to know. Like, you know, this is where players sometimes have to think, I suppose.
No, that's NFL right, exactly. Players and they pay accountants and financial advisors. you know, I could only assume a pretty penny to sort of figure that stuff out for them. So, you know, that's the joys of being paid large amounts of money.
Large amounts of money. That's right. That was sort of, I guess, sort of the, I mean, there wasn't much else in that draft that really stood out. A couple of things beforehand, like with the Cowboys picking Michael Bennett from the Patriots, but nothing really, really sort of stood out.
No, that was the thing. Like, that was just, I was sort of looking forward to a nice little afternoon of watching deals and everything come across the table for the trade deadline, and it was extremely uneventful.
was there any other news you had before we move on to studs and duds?
Well, one thing that did happen too with the trade deadline being over now was Trent Williams, the left tackle for the Redskins has ended his holdout now. So I can only assume that he was sort of waiting for them to possibly trade him to another team. Now that they haven't, and he's going to be staying with the team, he's ended his holdout now, so he'll be back on the field next week.
Yeah, that's right. I just in that, like, the guy doesn't want to be there. You know, they're not going anywhere.
It's odd.
Washington Redskins. I just don't know if they know the They don't know, not them, I should say, but the owners don't know how to run a team. They're just, everything they do is mind-boggling. And that was even from that draft. The whole locking out people from the draft, I read, when, you know, the owner drafted that Dwayne Haskins, like, he locked all the people out and he said, nah, I'm dealing with this draft. Like, it was just,
The owner there, I can't think of his name. He wants his handprints all over it. And it's just like, that's why you hire a GM, you know, so you don't have to be involved in this. Like, that's why you hire a GM. And if you can't trust that GM to make the right decisions for your football team, then get rid of the GM. Yeah, do what Jerry Jones does at the Dallas Cowboys. Like, you know, him and his son Stephen Jones, they're the be all end all. They're the ones that make all the decisions. If you can't trust somebody to be the general manager of your team and to trust them draft wise and everything like that, then get rid of them. Simple.
Dan Snyder is his name. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Looks like a douchebag, but anyway.
Terrific. Just one more thing that sort of that popped out of this week's games was JJ Watt for the Texans. Mm-hmm. Torn pectoral muscle, and his season is over. So that is a huge loss for the Texans on the defensive side. And obviously they haven't made any moves to replace him, you know, before the trade deadline. So defensively, that is going to hurt them a lot.
Yeah, correct. I mean, they did, like we sort of talked about in a review at the start of the year, they were all in. They did a lot of trades that were a bit sketchy, and they gave a lot away draft picks. But, he's just as big as of a loss as if they lost Deshaun Watson. Obviously, Deshaun would be a huge loss, but JJ on that left edge is a scary thing to look at.
No, so, well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. The whole Watt family, good God. Like, you know, TJ Watt, who's playing at Pittsburgh at the moment, had a really good game there against the Dolphins on Monday night, which sort of we didn't really sort of go into the Monday night game because it was a bit of a turd fest. Not the most appealing game anyway. I watched that, and Mason Rudolph just sort of yucked it up to start the game and got better as it went on. But TJ Watt. He's looking like a beast there, you know, at Pittsburgh. So defensively, Pittsburgh they're not going to be a pushover anymore. Like defensively, they're going to be pretty good. You know, Minka Fitzpatrick there, TJ Watt, Devin Bush, you know, they've got a decent sort of defensive core that they can sort of shut down, players. So, it'll be interesting to see how they progress as a defensive unit to sort of help out Mason Rudolph and also, James Connor, who was in a sling after the game. So I haven't heard anything more on that injury, on that shoulder injury.
So it's an AC joint injury. They haven't come out. They haven't ruled him out yet at all. All they've said is he's down as a probable, or questionable, I should say. It depends how bad it is. Like it's possible that he can do some light training. So they don't want to rule him out. I mean, he's limited in practice 6 weeks, but they reckon he doesn't really need to do a lot of training in order to get game time sort of ready. So
they just have to keep him healthy. That's a rough injury as a running back to sort of keep, you know, keep pace on and sort of, you know, keep in check. Cause boy, they're cup of pummeling.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they definitely do. He was actually, if I was looking at the studs and duds of the week, he was one of my, they were playing the Dolphins, so it doesn't really help, but he was definitely up there as the start of the week, at least sort of looking at finally coming back to form.
Their receiving core there at in Pittsburgh sort of looked a little bit better. I said, Mason Rudolph just junked it up at the start of the game.
Oh, the guy, looks like he's always knocked out. I love and hate his look. He looks like he's always
I think I said this when he got hurt, when he had that concussion a couple of weeks ago. He just, he looks like he's got a gigantic, is it bad to say that it looks like he's got a gigantic head? It looks like it doesn't fit inside the helmet.
He has a massive head.
It just looks like it's huge.
It looks like, it looks like he's always on concussion. It's terrible to say. We call it MLS between me and you. That's a whole little tidbit of everyone else. But we'll brush that one over. It was between Connor, Matt Sherb coming, 460 yards coming in for the injured Matt Ryan. But for me, my dud went to Drew Brees. You know, as quick as that guy come back, it looked like he just doesn't skip a beat. Yes,
was effortless. It was absolutely effortless.
It's just amazing. Like, he's like we all harp on, we all gloat about Tom Brady. But I mean, this guy obviously is a surefire Hall of Famer, but to come back as quick as he did and then to throw 373 yards.
Unfortunately, he gets forgotten in New Orleans. And, he went past 75,000 passing yards this week.
Yep.
He's about 2,200 in front of Tom Brady.
Yes, exactly. His only thing is letting it down compared to Tom Brady is obviously the Super Bowls. That's all.
No, of course, and that's the anomaly that's part of it. Like it's the point that Brady has got so many of them, when you look at the Hall of Fame quarterbacks that sort of are running around at the moment, the older guys, when it comes to, with Drew Brees, he's only got one, Roethlisberger's got two, it's the anomaly that Brady is just such. In that regard, such a tier above everybody. But when you sort of go with coaching record and everything like that, like Peyton and Sean Payton and Drew Brees are not really that far behind, as in a combination of coach and quarterback, that far behind Belichick and Brady.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's crazy. Everybody sort of forgets that. He's down in little New Orleans down there in Louisiana, but it's just, he just goes about his business.
I think he likes it too. I think he likes he likes not being in spotlight if he doesn't have to be.
No, I'm sure he would love to be in the spotlight like that, but it would be super pressure in that town. Like, the pressure that he would be under just in that town, and he sort of come out and wants to pass the torch on to people like Zion Williamson, in New Orleans. If you love this town, they will love you back. Like they are a super passionate fan base there. When it comes to the Saints, and it's crazy. He would put a lot of pressure on himself. But like you said, it's just the anomaly that Brady has got that many Super Bowls and they've been that dominant over this longer period of time. And for me, it also comes down to the crappy division that they've been in. They've had no challenges in that division for I don't know how long. And the NFC South, apart from sort of Tampa being a bit of a dumpster fire lately, but the Panthers and the Falcons are nowhere near as bad as what the Bills and the Jets and the Dolphins have been. Yeah. So it also comes down to where they are and where they play.
Yeah, that's exactly right. My dub was it was centered around the sort of trade deadline, and it's really just that entire Cincinnati Bengals team. They're 0-8, so it's not that. I guess it's just against the organization. Like they're 0-8, right? So Miami are doing it well. They're tanking. Everyone can see it. They're accumulating massive picks and massive cap space. These guys have Andy Dalton that seems to be like he's coming to an end, an aging AJ Green and Geno Atkins, but they've done nothing. They literally did nothing at all. They could have accumulated picks. They just could have done a lot of stuff, but they literally did nothing at all. And they don't seem to care about winning the football games this year. I don't know. It's just you know, 0-8.
I think the management and ownership in Cincinnati have been immune to winning up there for a long time there in Ohio. It's they're bizarre. Like that, you see their stadium. It's a large stadium, and it looks like it's half full every game. Like that can't be good for your bottom line. You've got to be making money, right?
And you can't blame the. I wouldn't blame the Bengal fans for wasting money on an 0-8 team, but
no, of course not.
They at least appreciate sort of like I said the trades and the tanking and all that. There's nothing wrong with doing it if you know. Tanking to me, it's not a hush hush thing, but I guess no one talks about it, but we all know if teams are doing it, if that makes sense. Like it's just one of those things that if you know the team's going bad and they start accumulating picks, of course, you know, they're tanking ready for sort of the next season. So it's not the great, I know NBA are very strict on sort of teams tanking and like, you know, having decent starting five players and all that, but NFL that doesn't seem to sort of matter, especially when they've got 53 players on that roster anyway.
No, well, that's part of it as well, you know. And like you said, yeah, Miami are doing it well, and I think you know that's Cincinnati. I can only assume they come into this season and they thought that they were going to
correct,
you know. Going to go all right this season. So, and yeah, now they're 0-8 and sort of rivaling, you know, with them and the Redskins and the Dolphins to be fighting for that number one draft pick.
Well, at least they still got there. So that's probably one good little shining light for the Bengals. But no, they're duds. Sorry. The whole organization.
Well, that's right.
This week, at least, anyway. We'll see.
They're just, I don't know. It's a bizarre sort of situation up there. Like I said, they're immune of winning, and they don't, the ownership and management, they don't, it just looks like they don't seem to care.
No, correct.
It's just bizarre. So my start of the week I thought it was pretty obvious, was Aaron Jones. He was an absolute beast against the Kansas City Chiefs.
He had
13 rushes for 67 yards. Okay, that's admirable. 7 receptions for 159 yards.
Yeah,
like he was their best receiver and their best running back.
And it wasn't
just it's crazy. I watched him, and he had a couple of touchdowns to boot.
Yeah, it wasn't that he was getting I guess when I watched him, the touches he was getting, or the catches, I should say, that he was getting, it's not like he was getting like 50-yard bombs or anything like that. He was getting them at, say, 10, 20 yards, and he just broke tackles.
No, that's right. He was getting a boatload of yards after the catch.
After the catch,
like it was
correct.
It was just crazy. Like, he's a little nuggety sort of dude, but it's just like, Kansas City can't... You know, they can't really stop the run, but you know, their secondary is just horrendous. Once you get past sort of their front seven, like there's nobody can do anything about it. It was crazy. Yeah, he made a couple of massive, you know, sort of runs after the catch, and they couldn't stop him.
Yeah, no, they really couldn't. It's phenomenal. Like you said, the admirable at least for the 67 yards, but the 159 yards receiving for a running back is just absolutely phenomenal.
For a running back, you know, you'd be singing the praises of a receiver having 7 catches for 159 yards, let alone a running back. Like it's just crazy, and you know the way that that Rodgers is playing at the moment, and obviously that's his not to say it's his favorite target at the moment, but it's kind of his only target, I guess. Like his receiving corps is sort of left much to be desired.
Well, Devontae Adams has been out for basically the whole year, so it hasn't really helped.
Clearly, the number one.
Yeah.
So yeah, that sort of hurts him a little bit. But the way that Aaron Jones is playing, it's like, wow, you know, he's playing terrific.
Yeah.
So, like I said earlier in the pod there, I've got a little something. My dud of the week is Freddie Kitchens. it was baffling near the end of that game where I think they might have been inside 2 scores. I'm pretty sure they weren't quite 2 scores down. So they had a 4th and 11 and sent the punt team out.
Yeah.
Didn't want to burn a timeout. So he obviously was either ill-prepared or he just realized that, oh, hang on a minute, we're still two scores down. We need to go for it. So he sends the message out to take a false start, concede the five-yard penalty to make it fourth and 16, then proceed to send his offense back out there to try and get the fourth down conversion at a fourth down and 16. And then as the play unfolds, Baker Mayfield gets sacked and they turn it over on downs. Like, why was he not prepared if he knew that he didn't want to burn the time out?
Yeah.
Why did he not have, at fourth and 11, why did he not have a play dialed up to start with? And then set the punt team out there. That's such bad communication, either between him and the offensive coordinator, or just him as a play caller. Like, that's so bizarre. Like, why didn't he have a play dialed up?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, at fourth and 11, at least. Well, it's not even like we said. Like, if you're going to have the punt team out, have the punt team out. But it's all the after stuff that he's done. That's just being ill prepared. Yeah, correct. So even if he wasn't prepared, you know, you could have at least threw in a timeout there to re-prepare.
Well, that was the thing. He didn't want to burn the last time out because he keeps wasting challenges.
Yeah.
On things that he's not necessarily can't control, but he's such a poor, you know, when he goes out there for the coach's challenge and he's losing those, so he's burning timeouts inadvertently there anyway. So it's bizarre.
Yeah, well, it was a bizarre sort of series of events there, really.
Oh, it just, yeah, just as a play caller, it just looks like he's lost a little bit.
Well, that'll do it, I guess, for this week in the NFL, week 8 of the NFL season. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. I'm losing everything now. Final Play Podcast and Twitter at the Final Play Pod and SoundCloud. Sorry about a little bit of, we'll call it technical issues, I guess, halfway sort of through.
Technology, we'll work on that.
Yeah, not really. I kind of hate it, even though I'm around it 24/7. But yeah.
I'll give my internet provider a call.
That'd be great. If you can get that sorted, that'd be great.
Pretty sure it was on this end, but anyway, sorry about that, people. But yeah, we'll have that. We'll have that sussed out.
Have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Peace.
Peace. My name's Miles. Good luck watching your team this week in the NFL. And
Monday night game, Cowboys. Yay. First time in ages. Can't wait.
Yay. Cowboys Giants. Won't that be a super game?
Yeah, that's fine. I get to see Cowboys. That's all I care about.
Yeah.
Peace.
All right. Peace out, everybody. See you.